Why did the Egyptian cross the road?
Don't know.
Neither did I.
Okay, that could easily that be the start of the episode.
I should be a comedian.
Hello, welcome to Encyclopod, episode 5. Something to do with ancient Egypt. My voice may sound different today because I have a terrible cold, but I'm Alex, the same old one that you know and are indifferent towards. These people here are similar. Who are you?
I'm Heather, and I also have a cold.
I'm Gavin, and I don't have a cold yet. but if I get it, I'm going to spread it a lot.
He's sitting next to me. I'll try not spread the coldy love.
Okay, so what have we been doing? It's been a while since the last episode. 3 weeks, in fact. It was supposed to be only two, but we ended up busy and couldn't do it last week. So what have we been doing since the last episode?
Lots of things. Since my last episode, I've been doing even more.
Oh, of course. Did you listen to the Epic Socks?
I got 20 minutes into it, and I haven't finished it. And it's sitting on my desktop.
I don't know how you could abandon that.
I apologize. I have actually been meaning to do it. I thought I should do it before this one, but then I got caught up in researching and something else, which I will talk about later.
Will you?
Oh, it's very exciting.
Ooh, something else.
Something else. We also went to London, is the thing that I was trying to coax you to say.
Yeah, I know. I just wanted to mention that I hadn't been here for a while.
Okay.
Me.
What was London like?
Fabby.
Good, great.
We did lots of exciting things.
Such as?
Such as. We went to the Doctor Who exhibit, and we're big geeks.
We went to Wicked.
And we're even bigger geeks, well, some of us were.
Heather was.
Gavin.
We saw a Celebrity Mastermind, and we got to tour around BBC Television Centre, which is great.
Very exciting.
Fun. We saw Catherine Tate in a play.
And Chris O'Dowd.
Yes, but mostly Catherine Tate.
And Chris
O'Dowd. We saw the Taters, which is our nickname for her breasts, faithful listener.
It's not the whole Tater, just some of it.
Okay.
I can't believe we've just revealed that on something that I'm going to post on the internet.
It's fine. We love you, Catherine Tate. Just in case you're listening.
We do love Catherine Tate. I love Catherine Tate.
She was fabby.
She was pretty good in it. Mm. Although she was playing such a horrible character.
Yeah, somehow I still really... I hate the character, but somehow I still can really like her, even though the character
The play
really
was called Under the Blue Sky, in case you're wondering.
But you can't go see it anymore.
Can't you?
It's finished.
It should be finishing very soon.
Forget we even mentioned it then.
Yeah.
Do you know what I was impressed by? They actually cooked during the play and didn't burn anything. I'd find that hard.
That is impressive.
I'm not sure if they definitely were. I thought they might have just been releasing some steam nearby. I wasn't
smell
certain.
Of onions.
Oh, I didn't smell it. So.
You couldn't smell it? It smelled like chili con carne or something.
Oh, maybe they were cooking. That's impressive.
It was impressive.
Anyway, yes.
Yeah.
Another thing we did in London was went to the British Museum.
Yes,
and looked
indeed.
Around
we
some
certainly
of the,
did.
The Egyptian
section. I was a bit antisocial, I have to say.
I just kind of
made notes the whole time while the others wandered off.
We were less studious. We just went to the shops and stuff.
No, we did.
We
but
did
the thing
look
is, we looked around, but I didn't really feel like reading or taking notes myself.
Yeah, fair enough.
We were being a bit lazy, really.
Well, I didn't actually find all that much that's of use to this particular episode of Encyclopod because, well, we'll talk a bit about what specifics we're getting into later.
It's a shame that the Royal Museum in Scotland is closed at the moment because they had quite a good Egyptian section on the civilization. I think when we went to the London one, the British Museum, they seemed to have more, it was more just stone things they had, big stone things. They didn't really have any of the little tools that they used or anything like that, which was basically what the exhibition at the museum was. It's the Royal Museum? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, part of the problem is that the common stuff, which is what we really want to talk mostly about today, mostly has been destroyed because it wasn't built to last in the same way that big, grand royal tombs and pyramids and statues were. So most of the stuff they have at the British Museum is like...
Yeah, those big statues.
Well, made of stone, whereas normal homes weren't made of stone.
What were they made of?
We'll get into that.
Oh, okay. Sorry, skipping ahead.
Yeah, for some reason I always feel the need to divide the show very strictly into this bit where we're not talking about the subjects and then the bit where we are. Okay, why don't we transition then? Let's talk about what we already knew about Egypt. Although we did know quite a lot already. Some of us did anyway. I know Gavin did a project on it.
Mm. We could all say a fact we knew or something so we don't end up...
Yeah, okay. Heather?
Oh. I should have just kept my mouth shut. Okay, I'll go for a basic one. I knew that they built the pyramids as tombs to their for their pharaohs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that's true, or I'm going to sound really stupid. Sorry.
Actually, cough. they were to store blancmange. No,
Egyptian blancmange. Interesting.
No, you're right, Heather. Yes.
No, they were huge satellite dishes, you know, to get Sky Sports.
Is that your fact?
Sky Sports
Everyone
plus one.
Everyone needs Sky Sports. Even the Egyptians.
Mm.
Especially the Egyptians.
Yeah. See, I knew quite a few facts before, because I did a project in primary 5 or 6, and it was really interesting to me. And then I've done other random things about it. But in fact, our most recent film featured quite a heavy sort of Egyptian theme and stuff in it.
Yes.
In fact, there's a screening of this film this evening, but you're not going to be able to go and see it. Cause...
We'll let you know when it goes up on the web, because it will be available for viewing on the web at some point in your future.
That's the plan. But I knew a lot about the Nile. That'll do.
Yeah.
I won't talk about it just now, because we're going to probably talk about it.
I knew a bit about the Nile, that their lives revolved quite heavily around it. Mm-hmm. If you can revolve heavily. That's some terrible English right there. But I also knew that to make mummies, they pulled people's brains out through their noses.
Yes.
But we'll go into the details of that later.
Quite explicitly, I hope.
Yeah.
Of course.
Perhaps. I have read a horrible history book, which I think they're quite well known in Britain, maybe not in other countries, but they're basically kids' history books that go into... This one's called The Awesome Egyptians, and it's really good. I read it all the way through, and basically, we could have just read it out on this podcast, and I'd be quite happy with the result. But,
they are fantastic.
I don't know if you'd be able to read that in an hour.
Well, I don't know if we're going to be able to talk about all this.
The point of this episode is about the lives of ancient Egypt and how they lived. It's not about their mythology and stuff.
Yes.
So sort of,
we're not going to talk about their mythology. We're not going to go too much into the history and the different famous pharaohs and famous
just sort
other
of
people.
General day-to-day living and stuff.
Yes, but first, I do want to give a very brief history.
Yep,
I mean, incredibly brief. 5000 BC, nomads were wandering around in Egypt, and they settled down by the Nile to farm. 3100 BC, or sometime around then, seems a bit unclear, the pharaoh Menes founded the first dynasty, which was the beginning of kind of real ancient Egyptian civilization, it seems. And that carried on all the way to 30 BC when Cleopatra, the last pharaoh, died and brought the age of the pharaohs to an end. And that's probably when most people would say that ancient Egypt ended. So that's all you need to know, really. Started about 3100 BC, ended about 30 BC. That's the history.
And usefully for us, over that time, not much changed. I mean, obviously they had some natural development, but because of the Nile, I know they were quite closed off from other civilizations, so they didn't really, you know, discover something new. No one else happened to pass by in a carriage and show them, we can use animal power for this.
There was a bit of that later on. Towards the end,
definitely.
The Romans and the Greeks, and people had some interaction with them.
But mostly,
the desert, it was such a hot, sort of hostile desert around there. The Nile was like a tunnel of fertility and livability in the middle of a vast desert that basically kept people out.
I remember doing one of my pages in my project was the River of Life or something like that, which was the Nile. But it's useful for us because that means even though there's a huge amount of time that we're talking about there, the way they lived their lives was mostly the same throughout
that
time.
It does seem that way, actually. There were switching leaders. Pharaohs changed. There were many dynasties and different eras which have different names, but we won't go into them because it seems a bit pointless for this particular subject. Well, we're talking about the river basically at the moment. Shall we move on to talk more about the river?
Yeah, why not?
There's quite a lot you can know about it because their lives were quite river centric.
The most obvious thing to me is that it had cycles.
Yes.
Which pretty much defined how life was for Egyptians at that
point
in time.
Well, yes, it did, completely.
So, basically, it was when it was normal, when it was flooded, and they could, that would fertilize the land. And then there was a sort of... the time after that when they could grow. But there's also the drought, which would then, you know, no food, no water, that phase. And it seemed to do that. It was every year, and they tried to predict when it would do it. And they had a very good system, actually. Eventually, they built this sort of house thing, which had a hole which the water went into. And depending on what level the water was, they could predict how big the flood was going to be and if it would be, like, so big that they had to prepare, or if it was going to be so low that they needed to find other ways of making food in advance. So they're very clever, the Egyptians.
It did flood at the same time pretty much every year. Mm. In the middle of June was the flood season and started, and then it went on to about October.
And then after the flood season was the time when they'd
well, the soil was completely fertilised. Yeah. It was just like mud all around, and it was brilliant for growing stuff. That's probably why the nomads originally gave up their nomadship and became farmers there. And they did have other uses for the river as well, of course. Sailing it.
Mm-hmm.
They built boats out of, small boats out of papyrus reeds and bigger boats out of wood. And they could sail up and down, which was a good means of transport for both heavy loads of stuff and just for people. The good thing was that the Nile flows north, but the wind generally blew south. So they could, with their sail down, they would go north there, and with their sail up, they would go south. It was useful.
Yeah, it's pretty useful. And obviously they'd use it to wash themselves, and they'd all get their washing done by people in the town, and it was often men, not women, who did the washing. The washermen.
Makes you think, doesn't it?
Well, it makes me think. That's interesting. Which I suppose it is.
Yes.
And obviously they used to, like, fish as well in the river.
Well, yes.
So, I mean, the river had food, water, and cleansingness. It's pretty useful.
They were quite clean people. They liked to bathe a lot.
And eventually they worked out ways of sort of building canals to sort of channel the water into, like, so they could each have swimming pools and stuff.
Did they not do that to irrigate their fields as well?
They also did, yeah.
Shall we move on then?
To food?
To food? Mm-hmm. Or would you want to do farming first? I mean, they're related, obviously.
Go into farming. And then
farming? Okay.
Right, so basically in autumn after the flooding, they'd plough and sow seeds and stuff, the farmers this is, and then in March it was harvest time, so basically over the winter for us, but not for them, it would basically, the sun would, you know, grow the crops, and then they'd cut it down, harvest it. And then they basically had a lazy few months, because I think the sort of other people dealt with the crops after that. So basically, during the months when it was the drought and waiting for the flood as well, they could just have a little break, which is quite nice, I suppose.
I think occasionally they got roped into big projects on their break. We'll talk about those later.
Yeah, they get roped into doing things like building pyramids and temples and stuff. But if they were lucky, they'd just have a little break. So basically, they each... It was quite a... What's the word I'm looking for? Communist. Well, no, not communist, but it was quite...
It's not exactly communism. I think the term for it that is sometimes used is state socialism.
But I basically, like, you know, it was a lot more fair about how things were done.
That's very debatable, I think.
I think so. But I mean, like, the bit I was meaning for this in particular was, like, the farmers basically would have the set amount of land where they could grow crops, and then the next farmer's crop would be right next to it, probably of the same sort of whatever it is they're growing. And there'd be a rock, which would represent where one farmer's land begins and the other one ends, and state officials would come along every now and then and check them. I think it was just before harvest time they checked no one had moved the rocks to make sure that everybody was being fair with what was theirs.
On the other hand, though, this is getting a bit into the social structure, but technically all the land and agricultural produce, like their crops, were owned by the pharaoh. They weren't actually owned by the farmers who grew them.
No.
And the pharaoh would just, well, he wouldn't personally do it, but he'd essentially come along and say, okay, that's nice, you've grown lots of crops, I'll just have those, and here's your share of them. And they'd get quite a small share.
But anyway, what I meant was it was somehow, well, that's completely unfair, the land was assigned sort of fairly to the different farmers, though.
It was quite equal, I think.
Equal share.
Anything more about farming?
Well, I mean, they grew... What was it they grew? They grew a lot of...
grains.
Grains was the word I'm looking for, but I'm wanting to get something.
Apparently they kept garden plots as well, rather than like massive fields all the time, where they could grow onions and peas and beans and not that kind of thing.
Yeah, they had quite a... They think things like onions and garlic, so basically anything that tastes really strong, they thought was good for your health. So they sort of ate a lot of that, and a lot of peas, beans, lettuces, and they grew a lot of fruit, and there was lots of wheat. There was a lot of fishing as well. So, I mean, there's a lot of food that... They did actually have quite a lot of food.
And they farmed animals.
Yes.
They did do that. Although meat was generally not consumed that much by normal people.
It
was more for the upper classes and occasional feasts for the...
Well, I mean, the sort of... classes. The people of lower classes would normally eat a lot of fish. But, I mean, the sort of... There was antelope was a rare meal for the sort of richer people, which I thought was quite strange.
Mm. Well, at least it was rare. Mm. And they made beer and wine as well.
Yes, and a lot of bread.
And bread, yes.
Did they? I wonder if they invented bread. I don't know. I haven't actually found that.
I don't think they did. So. They were... The thing about the ancient Egyptians was they were, like, about the first civilization that is really famous. It may have been, like, the first huge civilization in the world. I don't know. I don't want to say that.
Just the first one that we have documents of.
Well, see, yes, possibly.
One of the things I think about with them is they actually have a life very similar to our own. In the terms of... They had religion, which I know a lot of people don't nowadays, but they have... Basically, all the social things are the same. Mm. How we do them is very different in a lot of the cases, like food and farming and shopping and stuff. But their structure was very similar to what it is still. Mm. And I just... You'd think maybe they would have... You'd think that back then they would have had a few things missing. Maybe they wouldn't have had education or jobs, but they have all the same sort of things that we do.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go live in Egypt. Ancient Egypt.
You'd get your TARDIS.
Another topic to move on to?
Food goes naturally with drink, so they drank a lot of wine, as you said, and that was quite an important part of their lives, actually, was the vineyards.
Well, was it? And
it was, yeah. Well, I mean, for the ones who worked there, obviously, it was an important part, but they'd grow the grapes, and this is very, very funny. I looked up one... I was looking some of this stuff up online, and they had a photo of some wall painting in, I think it must have been in some temple, and it was of them farming, and they had grapes, and it had two Egyptians going like this with the grapes, and underneath someone had captioned, "The Egyptians are happy with their grapes." And it was just this very amusing image of okay, I assume they're happy, but there's nothing other than them touching the grapes to show it. But and then it had... Naturally, obviously, you follow them from right to left, not left to right. And if you follow it along, so it goes from them planting the seeds to growing the grapes to jumping up and down in the barrel, all happy as well. And then to someone else drinking it, which I thought was quite funny. They don't drink it, someone else drinks.
Yeah, that's always the way, isn't it?
That's the way it was.
So from drinks to houses. Egyptians lived in houses. Mm. But as we've discussed briefly, the common people didn't usually live in stone houses. They lived in houses made of mud bricks, which were baked to perfection by the sun.
Well, they were mud mixed with straw.
Well, yes.
And sand, which is obviously they had abundance of.
Well, yes. The desert is good for that, if nothing else.
I just had a flashback to watching a video in Primary 6. I'm sure we watched a video of people making bricks, and I thought it was the ancient Egyptians, but now, of course, I realise it couldn't have been. It must have been people... reenacting.
Pretending. Yes. Those liars. And
but I remember they used moulds. They basically it was a very simple mould that they'd use, and they'd lay them out in the sun, and I remember that. Very interesting.
But they made those. They built simple houses, usually square and quite sparsely furnished. They weren't big furniture people.
No.
Egyptians. No IKEAs in ancient Egypt. No. They just had little tables and stuff and reed mats on the floor.
I suppose there's one thing that they didn't really perfect when I was comparing them to us. We have a lot of social things, and we have a lot of things in our homes that we like. So I suppose they worked well as a functioning civilization, but they didn't seem to have a lot of personal time.
Mm. You know,
but there's a photo here of a home, which it's a model of a home, and it survived because it was in a tomb. So it was like a miniature version of what it looked like. And I think that's all that's really survived of their houses, either wall paintings, hieroglyphic descriptions and small models.
Yeah, some houses had multiple stories in towns they tended to because they needed more space there. They were kind of crammed together. But inside they were dark, small rooms, Sometimes they had storage cellars.
Well, see, they were dark because they needed to keep windows small because the heat. You'd actually want to keep the heat out by keeping windows small. So it'd be colder with the shade, and the more light that gets in, the more heat gets in and stuff. So they needed to keep the windows small.
Yes, I think that was the idea. And they had like open kitchens with open roofs that. With ovens sometimes.
And some of them had pools.
And like grinding stones for grinding grain and stuff. They had pools.
Some of them did.
Ooh, nice.
The mostly more wealthy ones. Or if they lived quite near to the Nile, they could sort of channel it in.
Yeah, as I said, not much furnishing. And wealthier people had wall hangings and like paintings on their walls. But common people probably didn't. Not that much to say about the housing. I think, actually, some of the housing in Egypt is roughly the same to this day. I read that somewhere. I mean, poor people still live in houses that are fairly similar to the ancient Egyptian houses.
To me, they do sound quite inexpensive to build. Probably. Mud, sand, straw.
Well, yeah, it's just stuff that you can find lying around.
Exactly.
So they were quite practical. Sometimes they had areas, craftsmen had areas just outside their houses at the front where they could work at their craft. Okay, work and crafts and stuff.
Well, there were a lot of sort of craft-related jobs
yes.
that they had to do.
As far as I can tell, most of the craft-related jobs were to provide for the upper classes.
Yeah.
Craftsmen in the order of things were just above peasants who made up 90% of the population, and they were mostly farmers, so we've been mostly talking about them so far. Craftsmen were just above them, and they were skilled workers, and they would make things and sculptures. And
to run through, can I just run through this list here? So there's potters, furniture makers, metal workers, glass makers, weavers, leather workers, and jewelers, to name a few.
Yes.
And they all would normally work in workshops, which if they were working for the pharaoh would normally have their own workshop. And if they were working for the people, I imagine there'd be a separate workshop.
I think sometimes they had workshops in temples.
Yeah.
They had a lot of things in temples, but we'll get into that.
The thing is, it wouldn't just be like one person working away in a workshop. There'd be loads of different things going on, lots of people working away. And of course, at times when they're building big things, a lot of people would get drafted in to do that. So
yes, I mean, the farmers would get drafted in to build. Should we talk about pyramid building? Because that is... I have quite a lot of notes on it. And it was something that, as Gavin said, in the time when they couldn't farm, which was, I mean, all the way through the flood season, and probably some of the drought season, I imagine.
Yeah.
They would... I mean, if there was a big job like a pyramid being built, then they would get drafted in to do it.
But so would other craftsmen.
Oh, yes.
As well. And even children.
I mean, there's a lot of talk about pyramids being built by slaves, but it's hard to say, really, because, I mean, state socialism, that system kind of blurs the line between slavery and freedom. There wasn't really money in ancient Egypt until quite late on. It wasn't really a big part of their society, but they got paid in rations and food and grain and stuff. But there was the first recorded strike ever in the history of the world, which was on the site of a pyramid being built.
I didn't know that, actually.
Successful as well. There were all the workers just... apparently someone in charge told them they weren't going to get paid for this, and then they all just sat down and refused to work until they got paid, which is nice.
I mean, a lot of these things they were building, the pharaoh would be planning for their afterlife, because the afterlife was a huge part of their living.
That was the point of the pyramids.
Basically, their whole lives were preparing for their afterlife,
It's weird, isn't it?
It is quite... I think pyramids are basically big gravestones. And that's all essentially
pretty much, yes. Well, they are. It's weird. Yeah, pharaohs...
Do you think they're compensating for something?
In a way, you kind of... You could feel sorry for pharaohs, because while common people didn't have the wealth and stuff, they didn't really spend their entire life just preparing for death, which is what pharaohs did. And, you know, if they're turns out that there isn't an afterlife, or at least not one that Egyptians can get into with the weird things that they did to try and get into, then Pharaoh's kind of wasted their time, really.
A little bit. But they sort of...
They won't know, though, will
they? They led people, though, I suppose, in not. A way. They did. They made some amazing discoveries.
Well, yes. Anyway, about the structure of pyramids. Their sides were always aligned exactly to the four points on the compass. And the burial chamber was directly beneath the point of the pyramid.
See, so sorry,
there were some quite strict rules.
But, I mean, the fact that they even had... I don't know if they had compasses, but the fact that they could align it as such is quite a magnificent thing.
Yeah,
that's why I admire the ancient Egyptians. I keep saying Egyptians, it's ancient Egyptians, technically. But that's why they did a lot of really cool stuff.
Well, they did, yeah. I mean, no one... I don't think anyone really understands how they built pyramids. They are amazing. They're made of huge slabs of stone. The biggest one is the Great Pyramid of Khufu, or Cheops, as he's sometimes known. I'm just going to ignore the pronunciation.
Yeah, the name
mistakes I'm probably making here. But that's it. That's the Great Pyramid at Giza, which is made of 3.2 million stone blocks, each weighing an average of 2.5 tons. So if you add that up, that's about 8 million tons, which is quite a lot of stone to lug about.
I mean, they have theories. I mean, the thing is, Egyptians didn't have wheels, as far as I know. Is that right?
I don't know. They might have by the end.
I think towards the end they had chariots and things.
I think they had. I'm sure that there was a video or something that I saw where it explained that they did a lot of it by the old log system where
they used
logs
like,
and you roll
rollers
them, and the last ones out, you put it at the front again.
Sometimes sledges, I think.
Yeah.
Also, pyramids usually had a pyramid complex, which was like a little town thing around them. Not really a town, but it had some buildings like temples and smaller pyramids and probably multiplex cinemas.
Yeah, almost certainly.
Oh, and the reason... There are about over 100 pyramids in Egypt, but they did stop building them eventually because of grave robbers
and mummies coming back to life and all that kind of stuff.
Well, it was mostly grave robbers.
Mostly.
Partly the mummies coming back to life thing, but yeah, usually a pyramid couldn't last very long without being robbed, because people would see it and think, wow, he must have been wealthy, and they would go in there and take the wealth, because pharaohs were always buried with their lots of wealth and stuff. So they started building tombs in more discreet places, like Tutankhamun's.
Exactly. That's why it took so long to find them.
Well, yeah, it was only discovered in 1922 by Howard Carter, that old English... I don't know if he was old, actually, but he was an English guy. And there was all that talk of a curse, which rocked the world
cursed.
Back then.
Mm.
But it's a bit silly, really, because it didn't really... Two of the people related to the tomb's discovery died the next year, but that seems to be about all that happened, really. And Howard Carter lived quite a bit longer than that.
You can understand the fears back in those days, though, because, I mean, in a way, everything ancient Egyptians sort of led up to their death, and they had a huge mythology with the afterlife. So you you can understand that people might think... Because these tombs are essentially big graves, and there's most of the stuff that survived is actually to do with their afterlife, because they tried to protect it as much as they could.
I guess. But, I mean, that was in 1922 that there was that big curse debacle.
I can understand it.
Do you want to talk at all about the religious side? I want to maybe do a mythology episode of this at some point in the future, but we could just skim over the top of the religious world in ancient Egypt.
They had a heck of a number of gods.
They did, yes. They had a much more interesting gods than we have now, I have to say.
Yeah.
Some of them were animals, some of them were humans with animal heads.
And some of them were humans, some of them.
Yes, I guess. Who cares about them, though? Yeah, and they were all gods of something specific, like god of women and children, or god of
the sun.
War. Or...
They seem to have a lot for the sort of natural things.
Yeah, I mean... That's understandable. The sun they liked, because it obviously provides for everyone, obviously. And worshipping the sun was quite common in ancient times. I think even before Egypt, it was probably the first thing that really got worshipped.
But Isis was... Hang on, okay, I'll just read the sentence. I'm confused. The goddess Isis, who was Osiris's sister and wife. Sister and wife?
Yes.
Wow.
Egyptians did used to marry within their own families.
But also remember, these gods are fictional, so this is just a fictional backstory.
Well, there is a lot of...
True, but...
There is a big story about Osiris Isis and...
That's possibly. One of the others. The body ending up chopped up and spread all over.
And the first mummy came into that story. Mm. Isis, I think, made the first mummy out of Osiris or something. But the animal gods probably came from the fact that they were originally farmers and herders. That's maybe all we need to say about gods, because we're not going into the mythology too much.
But basically, the gods and pretty much everything, as I keep saying, was about the Egyptians' afterlife.
Yes.
Which actually, I don't think we should call the afterlife, because it seems that they're preparing for it so much that they thought that was life, and the life as we know it was the pre-life.
But it might...
If you see what I mean.
I guess, yeah. Some people like dessert better than the main course in restaurants, though.
Yes. But do you know what I mean? Like, as in, it was almost like they viewed what we call life as their before life, and then the afterlife.
But maybe
was
life
when they
is
would
not
really
the main
live.
Thing in the world, though.
It may not be. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if you see what I mean, it was basically they would spend this whole time preparing for.
So this is the pre-life, and that's the life.
That's the life.
And then there probably isn't an afterlife because that goes on forever.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, I don't know if they believed that.
I think
they
did.
Did.
They did eternity.
Actually, from one thing I read, it seems like they believed they wouldn't move on to the afterlife until the world came to an end.
Never heard that before.
I've only read that in one place, but it does kind of make sense because they went to a lot of effort preserving their bodies, and it seems that...
And that's because you need the body to live in the afterlife, though.
Yeah, but I thought... I mean, do you need it to survive in the real...
Yeah.
In this world forever?
That was the idea.
Do you?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
In fact, they used to just, if people weren't very wealthy, just bury them in the sand. But eventually, you know, the wind would blow the sand away and the body would get, blown all over the
land. It did occasionally preserve them quite well, though. Yeah. Like the peasant Ginger, who apparently is in the British Museum... and quite well preserved, even though he died 5,000 years ago. I didn't see him when I was there.
Maybe he was looking at one of the other exhibitions. But what I was going to say was... terrible jokes. Lovely. But eventually they developed a system of digging down really deep into the ground and building tombs and then filling up the entrance to that with sand, which shouldn't be confused with like big, proper tombs.
Yeah,
it was just like a hole in the ground. But
yeah, even common people were... I mean... Originally, I think mummification was only for the upper classes as well, but
eventually.
It became more common, and eventually common people were able to be mummified and preserved better. Okay, I have a lot about mummification here, which is
you can tackle
fabulously gory.
Yeah. Go on.
Bring on the gore.
Most of it is from the Horrible Histories book. It might be better if I actually just looked in that, because that has an order of what...
Oh,
how they did it.
I played a mummy in this museum film, didn't
yes,
I?
Yes, you did.
Yeah, we did a film at the Royal Museum of Scotland where things came to life and Gavin was a mummy. So he should
covered
have
some in toilet roll.
Special
Not
input into this.
Roll.
What does it feel
band.
Like to be a mummy, Gavin?
It was, well, I wasn't actually a mummy. I was just wrapped in bandages with a bit of sort of what felt like porridgey goo attached to me, and it was sort of ripping off so that slowly. It just looked like I was in my boxer shorts, which was awkward.
Porridgey goo. Okay, they basically take a body, put it on a table in a place called the Beautiful House, which is usually a tent, so that it doesn't get too horrible, the atmosphere in there. And then they stick a chisel up the body's nose and hammer it to break through the skull. Then they get a stiff bit of wire with a hook on the end, stick it up the nose and sort of root around in there to cut the brain into pieces. Then you use another rod with a cup or something on the end to scoop the pieces out. And then... They don't need the brain, apparently. That's not an important part of the body for afterlife purposes. So they just stuff the skull full of, like... Well, they have this stuff called natron, or natron. I don't know. Yes, it's a salty substance found around lakes near Cairo, and it was good for preserving the appearance of the body, so you didn't get all shriveled and disgusting looking. So they shoved the skull full of that and plaster. Then they cut open the front of the body, and they rip out most of the organs. Four of the organs get their own canopic jar for preserving those organs individually.
The intestines, stomach, liver, and lungs.
And then they stuff where those organs were with like linen and stuff, and then they sew it back up. And that's pretty much it.
Then, obviously, lovely. Wrapping it up in...
Oh, of course, yes. They wrap it up with linen bandages, and they put, like, scraps of paper with prayers and charms and stuff on them in the bandages, which is nice. Mm-hmm. Keeps away evil spirits and maybe, like, helps them get to the afterlife. And they leave the heart in there, which is important because... one of the first things they do in the afterlife is get their heart weighed.
Against a feather.
Yes, against a feather.
I just remembered something that I've written down. Apparently they thought that the heart and the brain had opposite functions to what they actually do, but they got pretty much everything else right in terms of organ function.
I wonder if that was... that's impressive. But I wonder if that was the first instance in the world of the heart being thought of as like your soul. Because it doesn't really make any sense, but
no.
It's still
weird.
Kind of thought, isn't it? In pop songs, at least.
Yeah, well, in when a lot of things, people believe the heart is responsible for love and stuff.
Which well, yeah, is... but it's the brain. I think they've pretty much proved that now. There's nothing to do with the heart at all. They also had to open the mouth of the mummy. That was one of the last things they did before picking in coffins.
The opening of mouth ceremony.
Well, yes.
Why did they do that?
Well, it was... Can I take it?
Why did they do any of this stuff?
I don't know. But it was so that they could... It was to let the mummy breathe and come back to life when it was in the afterlife. Mm. It was essentially... That was the last thing that they would do with the mummy. And then the first thing you'd do... It's basically it would wake you up in the afterlife and allow you to go on and enjoy the afterlife.
Yeah, they were quite obsessed with the connection between the body in this world and in the afterlife. It seemed to...
Yeah. And in fact, you'd get a lot of the time, like, if you'd lost a limb, they believed that you'd get it back in the afterlife.
Oh, they sometimes replaced them with fake ones.
So that you could have real ones.
In the coffin, yeah.
You got given, or some people at least at some point, were given little wooden figures called shabtis or something. I tried to work out how to pronounce it. Which basically, if you were ordered to do something in the afterlife, you could have these little wooden figures do for you.
Wow. Oh, cool.
Wow.
An army
little
of little
slaves.
Wooden
yeah.
figures. Wow, you should just get hundreds of them and just stuff your coffin full of them. So you just have a like army, and you could just go like, go over there and
attack
that other soul. That'd be great. I want to be mummified now. Not
can,
now.
Can one of your what canopic jars would you have? Like, what would you have? What
canopic
animals?
No, canopic jars are the ones. Oh, you mean
yeah, like the heads?
Oh, they're in
the heads.
In the shape of
yeah,
animal heads.
Jars.
Okay, let's go around this. Do I have to choose four, and assign
just
them to
your favorite
organs?
One, your favorite organ, and your favorite animal to be the canopic jar.
Okay, my favorite organ
out of your ones, any organ,
and not just some stomach, liver, intestines, and lungs.
No.
I don't know why Heather's laughing so much.
Because I can predict Kevin's answer right now.
I don't know. Maybe I'd have my intestines in a turtle jar.
Oh,
Heather?
I don't know. Do I have to pick a body part? This is so wrong. Eyes, because that'd be really creepy. And I'd want something comical. A penguin. Because Egyptians knew about penguins.
Penguin jar.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was going to go for eyes, but I have to go for something else now. My tongue in a monkey.
What? Your tongue in a monkey?
I'll clarify. I want my tongue in a monkey canopic jar. Not in... I don't want to put my tongue inside an actual monkey. I want to put my tongue inside a I cannot put jar with the head of a monkey.
Ow.
Sorry.
It hurts. You made the people in cold laugh.
This is fun. Because I don't have a cold, so it doesn't hurt for me to laugh. What's wrong with putting my tongue in a monkey?
Let's not go there.
Okay.
Okay. Shall we move on to something else?
Oh, okay. Yeah, apparently because of the mummification processes and all their kind of embalming things they did with taking out organs and all that kind of stuff, that's the reason why their knowledge of medicine was really advanced for their time. Because they could study organs quite well.
How did they work out the best way? Well, I mean, it's not the best, but it was a very, very good way of embalming bodies. How did they like practice?
Trial and error.
They
practiced on animals.
Did they like
or something.
Use different things, or did they just one of them clever enough to work it out? I don't know.
I have no idea. And who was the first person to mummify someone? Were they just some psychopath?
Quite possibly.
It's the sort of thing that you could imagine seeing on like one of these crimes, like CSI or something. Someone's mummified.
I think it's probably it has happened actually. To be honest,
scary.
In the series, maybe not in real life.
Anyway, for royal mummies, there were several nested coffins within each other, and on the outside, of course, there's a elaborately decorated sarcophagus. And they had funeral parties with food, wine, songs, and entertainers, and it sounds like a jolly old time, really.
It does.
I suppose for them, it was like...
being born.
Well, yeah, being born. It was like... Yeah, he got into the afterlife, probably.
Well, see, that's
if we did
why
everything
I'm,
right.
That's why I'm thinking of
oh, God,
this
did
is
we
the
do
pre-life
right?
and that the life.
Hmm. That's enough about death. Let's move on to more life. Yay.
Well, they don't call it death. Well, they didn't call it afterlife either. But people don't call it the death. They call it the afterlife. Because they don't think they die.
Yeah.
You're like afterlife man today, aren't you?
Yeah.
Clothes. Let's talk about clothes. That's a random thing to skip to. The basic attire of your everyday Egyptian was like a linen sewn tunic that would, for women it was that anyway, and it reached to their ankles roughly. They were usually white, and men sometimes wore tunics. Sometimes they wore just little skirts.
Well, see, in one of the places that it was described as a kilt actually, so it's quite interesting.
But they're basically like some. Just basic pieces of cloth worn around their waists. And especially working men, they would wear those because they weren't very hot.
Yep. And children would often just be nothing but sandals.
Yes, I've heard that. Yes, apparently very poor people and children tended to be naked.
Would they get sunburnt?
I don't know.
Probably not.
I assume their skin had developed to cope with that.
Because most people who sort of live in hot parts of the world and were born there and their families live there don't often get sunburned.
Yeah, it wasn't really necessary to wear clothes, I don't think. It probably just became like a fashion thing more than a practical thing.
They wore funky eyeliner.
Oh, yes, makeup. They liked their makeup, didn't they? They wore, like, eyeliner and eyeshadow.
Apparently it was usually green or grey.
And lipstick and blusher. They plucked their eyebrows. It was crazy.
A lot of the time, they wore wigs.
On special occasions, they wore wigs. I don't know about a lot of the time.
Well, it says here, especially on important occasions, but it does imply that they wear them quite a lot. But, I mean, there were wig makers, so I imagine that would imply that you have to be somewhat wealthy to get them. And, obviously, the priests shaved their heads. Which got me thinking, what system did they have for shaving? Because there are quite a lot of sort of bald...
Get a sharp...
And there was a lot of...
Wasn't just scrape it across them, probably.
Horrible, but they must have had a... They must have had a good way of doing it.
A lot of the time, I think, the doctors would sort of order patients to have a pure lifestyle and tell them to shave all of their body hair. So, I don't know how they did
it shouldn't
that.
Be called a Brazilian. It should be called an Egyptian.
Oh, they probably had people to do it for them. People, really skilled people. I mean, because they still just shave with blades without any covering or anything at the barbers today.
Yeah, that's true.
Most men had short hair, but weren't necessarily bald.
Baldness and grey hair were very unfashionable.
Didn't usually have beards and moustaches. If they had beards, then they had little tiny pointy beards. And women had shoulder length hair.
Oh, wow. I just read some remedies for baldness, which included blended lion. Sounds lovely. Hippo, cat, and snake fat.
Nice.
Ugh. Oh, I bet something horrible I thought. If they dressed up for a banquet and they were wearing a lot of clothes, they'd women in particular would often wear a cone of scented fat on their head.
Oh,
which would melt to cool them down and smell nice. No, but the thing is, it wouldn't smell horrible and it would cool them down.
It would feel horrible.
It would feel horrible.
Yeah, trickling down your face. I hate
no,
the feeling
of anything.
No, but
it wouldn't trickle
down
their
face.
With what they were wearing.
Oh, it got absorbed by their wig, did it?
Quite possibly. I don't know.
Wow. They liked their cosmetics as well. They had perfume, oils to stop their skin drying out, and yeah, they had baldness cures, as you said. I don't know if these things actually worked, but...
Well, you've got to wonder if why they kept doing it if it didn't work, but at the same time, it seemed improbable that it actually did work.
People just liked liquidising lions or something, I don't know.
But I mean, as well as makeup, they had a lot of jewellery to supplement their clothing.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
That's a very big part of what they did. Mm. Poor people wore copper rings or a string of beads, and then richer people wore more advanced...
Gold or silver. Or electrum, which is a mixture of both.
Yes. I like to mention that silver was rarer in ancient Egypt, so that was actually more important than gold. So whilst a lot of people had gold... Silver was the most important.
Maybe that's what I was channeling that time.
Well, see,
I've told this story many times to YouTube, but I haven't said it on this.
Which story?
The one when I was in primary school, I got this gold. I won a gold reading medal for reading. I don't think it was a special thing or anything. I think like everyone got them basically. But I said I didn't like gold as much as silver, so I made them give me a silver one instead.
I
which I later regretted.
I had as well. Yeah, Nowadays, I probably don't really mind, but as a kid, I have preferences.
Silver's better.
Did we talk about sandals? We did talk about sandals. So they didn't always wear sandals. They sometimes went barefoot, but sometimes they wore sandals of leather or papyrus.
Yeah, important people had leather ones, and poorer people, I imagine, had the papyrus ones.
Mm. Okay. Apparently some people had tattoos. I don't quite know how they made them. They probably didn't. I mean, they wouldn't have used the same method we use today, obviously.
No. Well, they might have used the needle.
They might just have been temporary. But women had them, especially dancers. I can't work out if they had naked dancers. I've been trying to work that out.
I imagine they did, but I don't imagine it had the same sort of connotations as nowadays.
I've seen pictures of like naked Egyptian dancers. Some of the books have them in, but they don't actually mention them. So
it might be because they were the poor people or something.
They might they're definitely like dancers by profession or something, I think. I don't know.
Well, do you want to move on to fun and dancing?
We could move on to fun and dancing and stuff. Okay, that's the end of the podcast. Ha ha ha. Okay, what do you have about fun and dancing?
Let me just find the pages. Well, they'd have a lot of sort of what I would call fairs or something like that. They had a lot of sort of social events where they'd be dancing and music.
Like festivals.
Yeah, festivals. That's the word I was struggling for. But apparently with the dancing, men and women never danced together.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And also, we don't know how their music sounded because they had no way of writing it down. So there's something they didn't quite perfect. Or I don't know if they even tried. But basically at the parties, dancing girls, acrobats and musicians entertained the guests. And so they'd have lots of sort of exciting things and flutes and cymbals. And
we're just talking about like leisure and pastimes and stuff now, because I know that they used to play board games like Senet or Sene, if you're French. I don't know.
It looks a bit like chess to me.
It's got a long thin board though, hasn't it?
I don't trust the drawing on mine. Well, actually, it's a photo of supposedly ancient Egyptians, so I don't really trust it.
Oh, yeah, all those ancient Egyptian photos.
Apparently, it also had a religious meaning, symbolising the struggle between good and evil.
We should have played that before this episode.
Well, there's lots of... I mean, they had lots of sports and games and running, jumping, fighting, and sort of... Fighting, and I mean they had wrestling and stuff as well. So I imagine it was playful sort of things. And wealthy people hunted for pleasure. Well, that's not changed.
For pleasure.
Yeah,
got me a pleasure.
And they raced chariots and such.
I think so they
must have had
wheels. I think they bolted as well. So it was pretty much like now.
kids had soft, well, not soft toys, they had toys.
Mm.
And they had actually quite clever things. They had one where, I mean, it's not that clever, but it's a sort of, it's still impressive. Mm-hmm. That it had, like, I think it's a cat, and the jaw can move by pulling a string.
Oh, yeah, I've seen lots of drawings.
I've seen that photo of a lot of different books. And they had other toys, like Pull Along Horse, which actually has wheels, so they must have had wheels.
Pull Along Horse, Pull Along Horse.
You know, you can just pull it with a string.
Along.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm.
Yeah. It's impressive.
Nice.
So there's lots of different
and they also used to race with their hands on their knees. They couldn't take their hands off their knees. They had to race from one point to another.
We should do that. That sounds fun.
We should, yeah. When we don't have colds.
Hooray.
Yeah, maybe. Good idea.
I don't know a great deal about leisure time. That was one thing that I kind of hoped someone else would find out about, and Gavin did.
Well, they didn't have much time for leisure because of all the work that they were doing
for the Pharaoh.
The wealthier people themselves would have more time.
Yeah.
And money.
Art, of course, that's kind of related because it's a... Some would say it was a frivolous thing. I don't know if I agree with that, but some would say it is.
Well, a lot of what we know about the ancient Egyptians was because of their art.
Well, yes,
because of the preserved wall paintings and stuff.
Even the hieroglyphs are... I mean, the line between hieroglyph and art is quite blurred, because they did have a very distinctive style for drawing in and painting in. I mean, you see it a lot on tomb walls and stuff. I don't think it was so much for the common people, but whenever they had a grand, like... building or architectural thing, they quite often like drew or painted on it. It's weird. There's only one style really that you associate with ancient Egypt, which is this quite simple lines and people in profile. You see a lot of people in profile.
Lot of things which explain stuff, like
yes,
how things were done.
And pharaohs are often portrayed, and size is a very important thing, because the more important someone is, the bigger they're portrayed in Egyptian art. I don't know a great deal about it, but I thought we'd better mention it, since it's
maybe
quite
we should,
a big part.
In relation to that, move on to one of the most important things ancient Egyptians did, which was their hieroglyphs and their writing, because I haven't spoken of that yet.
Yes, let's talk about that. So, hieroglyphs are... What are they? Someone tell me.
Well, they're a type of writing.
Yes.
Essentially.
Mm-hmm. To us, they look like pictures, but... And some of them do represent concepts or objects,
yeah,
but some of them also are just sounds that can
yeah
be put together
it's
to form
not,
words.
It's not really letters, it's sounds. Do you want to speak about how it was discovered, Alex? Because I think you'll know more about it than...
Discovered?
As in how modern people have worked out the language.
Yes, it started with the Rosetta Stone, really. I mean, hieroglyphs had been found before then, but no one really knew what they were.
We've seen the Rosetta Stone.
Yes, that was the first thing that we saw when we got to the Egyptian section of the British Museum. And I spent quite a while there just making notes. I didn't write down the stuff that's actually on it, because that'd be crazy. It's not, none of it's in English. There's three languages on it. All of them say the same thing. There's hieroglyph at the top, and there's Demotic, which was another Egyptian language, which was a more everyday thing than hieroglyphs.
Yeah.
And then there's Greek at the bottom. And we can translate Greek, or we could back then when the Rosetta Stone was found. So it was used as a kind of thing to translate the hieroglyphs, to work out what they meant, and it helped a lot in our understanding of what they are. When was it discovered? Does anyone
1799.
know?
1799.
Oh, that's right, yes. It wasn't really made full use of until Jean-François Champollion. sorry, Heather.
I apologise. I can't read what you're reading, so you could be saying anything.
I can't read my some bad handwriting. But it's a French-sounding name. And in 1822, he worked out that hieroglyphs were signs that wrote ancient Egyptian language. He then learned to read hieroglyphic texts.
What I find quite strange is I can understand how we could translate it nowadays with the Rosetta Stone, but I can't understand, well, two things. One, how we didn't think it, or nobody thought it was writing before that, but two, how it's written in three languages. I can understand there be two Egyptian languages being on the same stone, but how did the Greek end up on there? Because it must have been someone sat down and said, we're going to write up all three languages.
It was, I guess... Well, what the Rosetta Stone was it was a decree about something to do with royal priests establishing a royal cult. Well, it was in 196 BC that it was made, so that was quite late in the Egyptian language when Greeks had kind of started to come along, and, you know, I assume their language had spread a bit enough to be adopted by some Egyptians. That's about all about the Rosetta Stone, really. Well, it's not. I'm sure you could devote a lifetime of studies to it. I don't want to dismiss it just like that. But that's all you really need to know for your everyday life.
But, I mean, a lot of the...
I don't think you'll die not knowing about it.
There were a lot of scribes in ancient Egypt, and they used to keep a lot of records, which has been very helpful for us doing this encyclopod. Other people have translated them and worked out everything. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, they had... They kept good records in calculating how much food and materials everyone needed, and they had taxes that needed paid, and people had to work out who had to pay how much and keep records of who had paid and who hadn't, mm-hmm. and how much each farmer was producing so that they could get... Oh, it's complicated. But it's just really interesting they had so many scribes to take note of all this stuff.
Scribes were quite high in this social order, actually. They were above priests, who were above craftsmen, who were above peasants.
So, and often scribes would teach their children, like, so basically it would just be a family trade.
Maybe we should talk about education, because it was quite...
Well, yeah, eventually they started schools, sort of, to teach how to read and write.
A lot of temples had schools in them, although I think the poorer people generally just learned what their parents did from their parents.
Yeah, I think that basically a lot of trade work was learned.
But slightly wealthier children were sent to these priest-run schools. Well, maybe they weren't priest-run, but they were in temples. And it sounds like they were quite strict, because there was a... I can't remember what the quote was, but it was something to do with a boy's ear is on his back. He only listens when he's beaten.
Yeah.
That was like a motto of theirs or something. So doesn't sound like the best school environment, really.
Well, often they'd be taught how to write and read, and also a lot of the time they started doing more simple mathematics so that they could work out taxes and all that sort of things. Then a few people would become apprentices in workshops with their fathers, which would probably be the ones who didn't do so well in the wanted to become scribe and stuff. So, I mean, there was a lot of very basic subjects, but it was very useful.
Speaking of mathematics, by the way, Egyptians used the decimal system. And it seems like they probably used it because... Well, can anyone think of a very really obvious reason why someone would decide to count in tens?
No.
Okay. In short, no.
Fingers.
Yes, fingers.
Did you actually not know?
No, I couldn't think of anything.
I wouldn't have got that either. Don't worry about it. I don't think they were the first to come up with the decimal system, but they had it. Oh, also, they liked their astronomy. That was another academic pursuit they were really into.
They had very clever ways of splitting up time. They actually split their days into 24 units, which they didn't refer to as hours, but it's quite interesting.
Oh, did they? I didn't know that.
And also, they for a long time, they had a year being 360 days, so to lots of the 24 units. But eventually, they realised that went out of sync with the Nile flooding, and they worked in months, in terms of months, and used the moon, but eventually they worked out that was wrong. So eventually they worked out a system which was 365 days long.
Yes.
Which is very impressive.
And 12 months.
Yes, 12 months.
We still used our system. It worked.
It wasn't, I don't think ours is identical. I think theirs works quite differently. I think the new way they did it was by a star, which would only appear once.
Yes, they did. I mean, they studied the cycles of the sun, moon, and stars.
And I think this star would appear, and that would...
Sorry,
when the star appeared, that would be their new year.
And they did obviously know how long it took the Earth to go around the sun, which is fairly impressive
to
work out.
That's quite impressive, yes.
Without any really complex instruments or anything. They could also identify Mercury, Mars, Venus, Jupiter, and Saturn.
They also built this really, really large tunnel about 27 kilometres underground and accelerated particles and collided
did
them.
Did not.
Sorry, I've been, that's the other research I've been doing recently.
Yes. In case you don't know, then... Well, I think everyone knows about the Large Hadron Collider.
Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of square are you if you don't... Where are we going from there?
Well, I wanted to talk about something which I couldn't think anywhere else to squeeze in, and this seems like a good time.
Okay.
With this whole how long days last. They had obviously big sundials to tell the time, But somehow, I'm just very confused by this, they invented a watch. I'm going to call it a watch. I think people call it a handheld clock. That basically you could tell the time wherever you were.
Wow.
Well, not wherever you were. You needed the sun to be up. But basically what it was...
just looked
was
like a little sundial on your wrist that you turned to face north.
It was a sundial, essentially. But basically what it was like a ruler with a little block of wood up at the end. Mm. And you'd point it at the sun, or at least in the direction the sun was. Mm. But it needed to be exactly level. So there's a bit of string with something hanging at the end that you'd line up with a line on it. So basically you'd end up with something that was perfectly level, and you just pointed it at the angle of the sun. And the little block at the end, shadow, would tell you what time it is. But the shadow had to be the exact width of the ruler to be right. So you'd know if you were in the right place, if you were getting the right time.
That's weird.
And it was just very clever.
That is clever.
And you could tell what time it was based on that. So, they had quite a lot of impressive technology.
They also had some nice theories about medicine. Whether they were true or not is anyone's guess. Heather has some stuff about medicine.
A little bit. Oh, yes. They practiced what I've seen written anyway as faith healing, which is sort of using religion and mythological ideas in their medical practices, as well as doing... they did surgery, which they could do because they knew so much about the human body because of mummification processes. And also autopsies came from that, because sometimes a person who was doing the embalming process would sort of look at them and go, "Ooh, I wonder how they died." Apparently they sometimes analysed dreams to try and find out the cause of the illness and subsequently a cure for it, which is quite interesting.
That's cool. I don't know why.
The kind of things they used for medicine were quite varied. They were kind of herbal things, animal products, some of which weren't very nice, and minerals. I found some cures for common illnesses, which I thought were kind of... some of them were a bit disgusting, really.
There's
things like indigestion. Crush a hog's tooth and put it inside 4 sugar cakes. Eat for 4 days. I don't know what sugar cakes are.
Wow.
Does anyone else know what sugar cakes
made
are?
Of sugar?
Well, they didn't really.
Hogs,
they didn't actually have sugar
ground up in them.
They used honey to sweeten things, I thought. They must have had sugar at some point then.
Who knows? Talking about honey, they did actually use it as a natural antibiotic, which
they kept bees.
It's still known as.
Just thought I should
today.
Interject that.
They kept bees.
They did.
Aww.
Well, obviously, they had honey.
Everyone likes bees.
Yeah, bees. We're going to do an encyclopedia on bees sometime.
Oh, we should.
We are. We will.
Oh, here's a cure with honey in it for cataracts. Mix brain of tortoise with honey and place on the eye. And then you have to say a chant, which I didn't bother writing down because it's
didn't
really
have
cucumbers
long. Then.
Huh? Oh. No, only tortoise brain.
That's the next best thing.
Lovely. I just wrote down a couple more of the kind of things they'd use in their cures, like earth, yummy, excrement and hair, lots of lovely things like that. But I think the most interesting thing I found was that they used honey quite a lot, because it's still
honey
known
is good
as a
for,
natural antibiotic.
It's good for sore throats.
Yes,
I wish
exactly.
I had some right now.
Maybe we should get some honey.
Maybe we should. Let's do that later.
Cool.
Well, can I move on to women then? Because I was reminded by the fact that Heather is female.
Wow, I'm glad you noticed again.
Yeah, I'm just going to mention it on every show.
Okay.
So how cool I am knowing a girl. Now, women, how free do you think they were in ancient Egypt? Do you think they were equal to their male equivalents?
I think it possibly resembles what happened not recently, but I think it could have been that they weren't as high, but eventually they had female pharaohs. I'm not certain of this.
They did have female pharaohs, yes.
At some point.
They did do that.
But my books
I think
are
they
quite...
were. I think female pharaohs generally... played down the whole female thing. They just sort of don't make a big deal out of it.
No.
You're female. It happens.
I think there was the whole kind of they wanted male babies rather than females because they were more useful.
Well, that seems to be just about every culture, sadly.
Yeah, that's true. Yes, Egyptian sons were valued above daughters because they could support their parents in old age and perform the special funeral ceremonies.
But women, legally, they were essentially equal. They could apparently sell their own property, although that confuses me because I thought the pharaoh owned everything in Egypt technically. But they could marry and divorce, and they could pursue legal disputes in court.
I think men could marry more than one woman, but
they
women
could,
couldn't
yes.
marry more than one man.
They were expected to obey their parents and later their husbands, who were allowed as many wives as they could keep in comfort, so I assume if they were just neglecting all their wives, they would be stripped of some of them.
Yeah. Or by some of them.
Wow. Rich girls could go to school, just like boys, but others were expected to stay at home until they were about 12, which was old enough to marry and have babies.
Oh my gosh.
To be honest, though, that is probably about the time when it was
biologically,
physically possible. Yes, exactly, it's possible.
Yeah.
So you can sort of understand the assumption that that's the time to do it.
Yeah.
They were usually encouraged to marry someone their parents approved of, and sometimes this was a family member, but not necessarily. I think they sometimes married for their own reasons. It seems like they were, in theory, independent, but generally they didn't take advantage of that, necessarily. I'm sure some of them did.
Did men ever marry men and women ever marry women? Because I know homosexuality was actually acceptable in ancient Egypt.
I didn't know that.
Apparently, I don't actually have a much
I
on
doubt
it, because these are
we are reading
kids'
books,
yes,
so
exactly.
They probably wouldn't say that.
I doubt that marriage really happened.
I don't think the marriage
them.
Happened, but I think that it was acceptable.
Maybe
or at least
it was
not frowned upon.
I haven't researched that.
I know in ancient Greece it used to be sort of a you had sex with women for babies and men for fun. That was the way they did it.
Ancient Rome as well was just a hotbed of homosexual greatness.
I suppose I think it went through phases of being acceptable and not acceptable, possibly.
Oh, there was a chief wife, actually. So, men with more than one wife, which was probably a lot of them, had a chief wife who was, like, equal to him and got his stuff when he died. Now, law.
Ooh, I don't have
anything about
law.
Mm-hmm. They were quite fuzzy, seemingly. They didn't really have strict rules that society was expected to obey. I think they just had, like, Wikipedia says, a common sense view of right and wrong. Punishments included execution, fines, beatings, exile, and nasty things being done to your family.
Mm.
There weren't any lawyers, so you had to represent yourself. And occasionally, gods were consulted about whether the thing they'd done was right or wrong via oracles.
I suppose they did have quite a lot of religions, but even in ancient Egypt, they had the sort of, you have to not sin to get into the afterlife. That was the whole heart being weighed against the feather.
I suppose it was,
It was, if you'd done wrong, if your heart was heavy.
They don't really talk that much about whether you have to, you can sin or not.
No, it's not sinning in particular, but it's if you've done,
condition
if you're
your body
good or bad and stuff.
Mm. Okay, things we haven't quite talked much about. Temples, that's a thing. We did mention them briefly, but I should probably mention, for example, they were like little mini towns more than just churches.
With sacred pools and palaces for pharaohs and courtyards and stuff.
Workshops and granaries and libraries and schools and shrines and other stuff.
Lots
can't really
of
keep
stuff.
That song going on for too long. The shrine was the religious bit of it, where only priests were allowed in, and they had like a statue of the god. I think each temple had a specific god. I'm not entirely clear on that.
I know that each god had a specific temple, but I'm not sure if some temples had more than one god.
It sounds to me, from what I've read, like each one only had one. And it sounds a bit weird, actually. I don't know if priests just went a bit mad, or if this was what they were supposed to do, but they apparently, like, the statues of the god, because they also had a statue in the shrine, they had clothes, and priests would go in to change their clothes and, like, give them offerings of food and stuff.
Like changing mannequins, essentially.
Yeah, pretty much, by the sound of it. Ordinary people didn't get to go in. They left their prayers on stone tablets outside.
Mm.
And probably the priests just threw them in the bin or something. I don't know.
No, they would have had...
Just used them to prop up the coffee table. Anyone got anything else to mention? I seem to have run out of major subjects on my sheet of paper.
I think we've covered most of the major subjects.
We have, yeah. There's a few little tiny things that I should probably talk about, but it will be even more random than the rest of this show.
Hooray. I could mention my random
thing. Yeah, let's hear some of your random
thing. Where's the thing?
It's random
it's the,
time.
They call it thingy. With notable exceptions, I attempted to live yesterday as an ancient Egyptian.
Did you?
Feedback to you.
Wow.
Notable, like, one of the notable exceptions being any time I spent with you, Alex. So, so that explains why I wasn't being an Egyptian.
Oh, you should have told me. I could have played along.
I'm sorry.
Were you wearing a
bed sheet? I suppose
we
did get the bus,
though.
So.
I'll get there.
Oh, my God.
Right, so in the morning, I'd made the decision the night before so that I could have something to feed back to you. So in the morning, I wore my dressing gown. for most of the day until someone rang the doorbell. Then I realised my mum's out, so I had to get changed really quickly. It was my auntie. Oh, no. She needed a wee. So,
this is very Egyptian.
So then I got back to the bathrobe. Or whatever you call it.
Dressing gown.
Thank you, that's it. And then for food, I tried to limit myself to slightly things Egyptians would eat. So I had Weetabix for breakfast.
Gavin, I love you.
Because, you know, they had grains and wheat. I had bread, because they had bread.
Was it harvest or something?
Well, yeah. But, I had quite a lot of fruit, because they had fruit. I tried to limit it to slightly what they'd have, so grapes and stuff.
Yeah.
I considered putting the grapes in a bowl and stamping on them and then drinking it. But I don't think anybody would have been that impressed, and I probably wouldn't have liked it, so I avoided this. I then went and played, because my mum, as I mentioned, my mum was out, so I played with some of the toys the kids have, the very basic wooden ones and stuff, which are actually, no one really plays with the kids, so I've sort of played with those for a bit, that got boring quite quickly. So then I built a pyramid.
Did you?
Out of Lego. I have a photo of this on my phone,
wow,
which I'll let Alex have to put on the Encyclopod website,
oh,
so you can
you.
See my attempts at living life as an ancient Egyptian. Stop laughing
You're
at me.
Fantastic!
And then I listened to some music, which the Egyptians did. I tried to hunt down, but obviously no one knows what it sounded like, so I basically just did the normal music listening to. But that was my very mediocre attempt at living life as an ancient Egyptian.
That's
and
incredible.
I have to say, it was quite fun.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I was happy.
That's our verdict then. Egyptian life was quite fun.
Well, of course, I didn't actually do. I wasn't a slave. I sort of viewed myself as one of the more, you know.
I can help you out with
that. The
higher
up they are. And then, of course, I thought about doing some writing or something, scribing, but then I thought there's no point.
That is fantastic. I'm going to pat him on the head.
Oh, and what did I have for.
There.
No, I can't remember.
Okay, my random stuff is much, much less interesting than that. Can't really compete.
Though, as I said, there were some notable exceptions, like
getting the bus,
going to a filmmaking group.
I also had. I gave up at night because I couldn't find anything in the house worth eating. So I had some Yorkshire puddings and gravy.
Wow.
But, you know, at that point, I'd already stopped being an Egyptian for a good few hours. And
you're going to kill Heather's throat if you're not careful.
You know, but I made an attempt to do something more investigative than just research for Encyclopod. So,
wow.
So there you go.
Okay. I was just going to mention a few random things, so I'll just say them all in quick succession. Egyptians thought a balanced relationship between people and animals was an essential element of the cosmic order. Thank you, Wikipedia. They kept pets, livestock, and even bees. I already mentioned that, but it's interesting that they had that relationship with animals. Although they did often sacrifice them, interestingly, to the gods.
Did they sacrifice bees?
I don't know. It'd be hard to sacrifice a bee.
Just
fly
make it
away.
Sting you.
Oh yeah, but
they
no.
Don't
some
actually die when stinging.
Some
it's only
do.
Honeybees. I think.
The Lighthouse of Alexandria. The Lighthouse at Alexandria, or the Pharos, as it's sometimes called. I was only familiar with it because you can build it in one of the SimCity games as like a monument. Although it doesn't exist anymore. It was built in the 3rd century BC for ships to like see, and so they knew where they were. And it was later used as a lighthouse and destroyed in the 14th century by 2 earthquakes. And then built into a fort in 1480. So he's not really there anymore, but it was one of the wonders of the ancient world, apparently, so I should probably mention it. The Great Sphinx is another famous landmark, which is a lion with a man's head, which is unusual for Egyptians. They usually like men with animals' heads. It's at Giza, and it's carved from limestone rock. And
how does it smell?
What?
It doesn't, because it has no nose.
It's
hold on. No, let's do that again. One of you has to say, how
does
it smell?
No nose. I didn't know it had no nose.
My Great Sphinx has no nose.
How does it smell?
Awful.
Okay.
Sorry.
It was probably created around 2500 BC, and its face may be a portrait of the king at that time, and it's a symbol of royal power.
Just to clarify, because you said it didn't have a nose. It did have a nose. It fell off.
Did it? Mm-hmm. I didn't know that. But it has been...
It does look like it's fallen off. It
has
like
been restored and repaired many times,
yeah,
even
but
in ancient
not its
times.
Nose.
I mean, that was such a big era that it fell apart while ancient Egypt was still around and they just patched it up.
I know there's theories that its beard was definitely the beard that is currently attached, which bits of it have fallen off.
There's a bit in the British Museum,
yeah,
in fact.
There but there are theories that that was possibly one of the touch-ups, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So I think the last thing we want to talk about, unless anyone has any other random things to interject, Egyptology as a kind of subject for study kind of began with some French scholars who remained in Egypt after Napoleon left in 1799, and there was kind of a custody struggle between Brits and the French over a lot of the ancient Egyptian artifacts that were found. Brits took a lot of them in 1801, including the Rosetta Stone. But the French quietly simmered and held on to some papers, which were very important, and in 1809 they began publishing the Description de l'Egypte in 24 massive volumes. And that was I think a lot of our current information about Egypt comes from that, or was that was the base that Egyptology was based on. The British Museum was apparently very important after that in acquiring items and researching it, but that's according to a plaque that I read in the British Museum.
And they want to boast.
Yeah, they do want to boast, obviously.
Well, I mean, things like the Rosetta Stone and other discoveries, paintings and all that sort of stuff. There's so much that led to build up the picture of what life
is
like. I know,
tombs are actually quite important because not only do they have objects preserved in them, they have paintings of everyday life. I don't know why they have paintings about everyday life, since that's not what being a pharaoh was about, but they do, which is very useful.
It is actually quite
Maybe they were just screwing with everyone. Maybe everyday life was completely different. I don't know.
But I would think it's quite interesting that they actually documented all this, because they mustn't have just planned it so that people like us could discover it. But it's also quite strange that civilizations died out rather than carried on and changed more, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well,
it's interesting.
I don't know that ancient Egypt exactly died out.
No, but
people
stopped
calling it ancient. And
yeah, but people...
Well, I mean, I don't think they called it ancient then.
People stopped living their lives that way and the houses didn't survive and stuff. They didn't just keep adding on to that. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean, yes. I mean, there's very little left over from that life. Some people live similarly, but others are completely different. They have a big dam on the Nile now, which controls the flooding, so... It doesn't just flood all in one go and make...
I assumed that it wouldn't.
...things difficult. You know, the world has changed. I was going to recite the thing from the beginning of Lord of the Rings, but I've forgotten it.
Okay.
Is that everything?
I think that's
Have we
everything.
Actually done this episode? God, I've been so stressed out about this episode, to be honest. I mean, there is so much to say about it.
Yeah.
Compared to our previous subject... I mean, elephants was a huge subject, but...
Yes.
But this one is just crazy, and we haven't said everything that we could say about it. But
I mean, even if we're being honest about it, something like the Rosetta Stone could probably fill a good hour and a half.
Yeah, probably.
If we wanted to. But it's nice to actually do quite a broad subject and fill people in on lots of little things, as well as doing
detailed ones. If any part of this interests you, if any of it has piqued your interest, then go learn more about that. There's lots of sources out there. Actually, we've mostly used books this week.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I went to the library, I mean, there are so many books that I didn't take out. I took out ones that focused on the ancient civilization and ones called Life in Ancient Egypt and Life in an Egyptian Town and stuff like that. But, I mean, there were books on the pyramids and their mythology. Loads of stuff. Check the children's section, because the books there aren't actually that childish. They contain a lot of useful information, I think.
Yes, and there's lots on the internet as well. Our sources may not be quite as full this time, because I didn't use the internet quite as much. But, oh well. I hope you've enjoyed hearing about it. Any final thoughts?
Try living life as an ancient Egyptian.
Eat some Weetabix for breakfast. That could be their new slogan.
It was the Weetabix for breakfast and the building of the Lego pyramid that completely got me. It's fantastic.
Yes.
Well, I mean, I was going to make more of an effort, but then eventually I thought, there's actually not much I can do.
It's better when you don't.
I mean, I could have praised a god for a while or something. Or
you could have.
Something like that, but I didn't. There wasn't.
I have an Anubis statue somewhere.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know where it is. Keep an eye on the Encyclopod website, encyclopod.co.uk, and send feedback to someone@encyclopod.co.uk. So keep an eye on the website. It will be changing a bit, and we'll do another episode at some point, although I don't know if these two will be on the next one. I might have to find other people. I need to make new friends quickly. But I'm not going to desert this project. I considered it in this past few weeks, but if we can do this subject, we can probably do anything. So.
Yeah. I think...
Even if it's a slightly irregular schedule, I think we'll keep going.
Yeah.
I mean, for most of the people who are involved, or a lot of the people either that Alex would even ask to be involved in future, a lot of us are going off to uni and starting, or a lot of people are at least returning to uni.
Including me, in fact.
So, I mean, there's going to be a lot of change over the next few weeks. So it might be a bit sort of hectic over the next few weeks to squeeze in episodes, but then hopefully people will find the time and...
We'll get into the routine of uni, and hopefully we'll have time then. Okay. Yeah. I'm sure there's something I always mean to say at the end of episodes, but I don't know what it is. So.
Oh, well.
Maybe at the end of the next episode. I'll write it down. Okay. Thank you very much for listening. And we'll go and get some cold medicine or something and some food.
I'll get some cold medicine in preparation for probably getting this cold from being in a room with these two.
I'm sorry. But it is important, this.
We're sharing people.
Yeah. We are. We share everything.
Goodbye, faithful listener.
Bye.
Goodbye.
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 Weetabix.